Nick, of course, the issue of mind control, very controversial. What got you interested in this arena? How did you get into it?
Well, you know, it really goes back even before my interest in the HARP issue, you know, which is the early 90s. I mean, we were considering what was possible in terms of new technologies that would affect human performance in a positive way. And then, you know, as we started to dig into some of the issues in terms of military technologies, we started to uncover quite a bit in the area. In fact, you know, over the years, we amassed so much material, I ended up with over 300 source documents I just used in completing a book on this subject, Controlling the Human Mind. And this, you know, this information goes back really to work done at Harvard in the 1920s and advances from there. And we sort of trace that history right up to, you know, where we are at the present time. And, you know, this whole area of controlling the human mind is, in fact, what I think to be the most important issue of the day, because this technology, I mean, HARP was important and remains an important issue, but this issue, the idea that you can affect a human mind or affect a brain by external means, is something that really deserves much wider discussion than it's getting. You just see little blips in the news from time to time.
Tell me about the Lay Foundation.
The Lay Institute on Technologies was set up by Dorothy Lay, who is one of the heirs to Herman Lay, who founded Lay Potato Chips with Frito, and
okay.
Frito, and then became their chairman of PepsiCo when he merged with them. She got very interested in our work and was watching, you know, the trends in technology, and decided that it was important to really start to put some effort into getting the public educated in the ways that we have over the years. So we joined with Dorothy, and I serve on her board as her executive director, and it gives us a chance really to educate the public more broadly on technology's impacts, and hopefully address some of the ways in which we might influence the direction of that change in terms of innovation. Because with Dorothy's help, the hope is to bring together even some of the innovators that may have solutions in these areas of technology that we've been discussing over the years.
Now, tell me a little bit about what you believe mind control manipulation to be. What's going on? Who's doing it?
Well, you know, it's on several levels. You know, if you go back, you know, from terms of government complicity, you've got to go back to, you know, the work that was revealed in the early 70s on MKUltra, and it even goes back further. You know, these were programs run by the CIA that got a lot of notoriety, and congressional investigation showing that, you know, the U.S. government used chemical means and other means for influencing human behavior. And when you start to look at the historic record, it goes back even further to a guy named Estabrooks. George Estabrooks was a scientist working in Harvard labs and studying hypnosis back in the 20s. And what he believed and started to write about in the late 20s was the idea of creating sort of the ultimate Manchurian candidate, which in fact was the first sort of discussion of could you use hypnosis to create someone that would operate in a way as a super spy. And by 1935, his work was classified in this particular area. Yet, if you read his published material over his career, you'll see that, in fact, he acknowledges he was able to do this by actually splitting a personality in a very unique way to create exactly that, a super spy.
Nick, the mind control, you know, we've had people who actually believe their neighbors are sending microwave blasts at them. And we've had some people on who have talked about, you know, defense, how to shield yourself from that. And then we've got the natural, you know, control, basically, the manipulation, you know, from high wires and things like that. What do we do in a society that is being so wired up where all this can affect us, physically especially?
Well, this is really the underlying problem. And in fact, you know, forget the area of mind control just for a moment. Think about physiological effects generally, whether they be of the mind or the body or any element within the body. And what is now known is, as unique as there's a genetic code, as unique as there's, say, a chemical code for the way chemicals interrelate in the body, there is, in fact, an electromagnetic code, a frequency code, if you will, in where energy will actually interact and create chemical reactions within the body. And it's really embodied within the larger area of biophysics, the idea of energy interactions with living organisms. And this is something that physics tended to ignore, but in the last several decades, you know, this area of biophysics now is showing that you can, in fact, affect any living organism by affecting the basic constituents that make it up. And that's where all of this technology starts to spring from.
The Russians, are they still doing this too?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, a good friend of mine, a guy named Alexander K. Varanin, he was the former head of the biophysics lab in the USSR Academy of Sciences for the 10 years leading up to the fall of the Soviet Union. And Alex spent 6 weeks with me here in Alaska back in the late 90s. And, you know, in his work in this area is quite remarkable. In fact, he's one of the guys that I think is unfortunately sort of lost in the shuffle. He's a visiting professor now in a half a dozen universities, some in the U.S., so a lot of his knowledge is starting to be shared. But this guy, you know, and guys like him, unfortunately, are being either underutilized or perhaps utilized in the wrong ways these days.
What's going on with the dark side of these technologies, Nick?
Well, you know, the science, and this is, again, you know, the science, you know, with the breakdown of Eastern Europe, a lot of scientists went to where the money went, and that's part of the problem as well.
Right.
Because all of this can be developed by any government today. And when you look at the vulnerability of systems, one of the things that's interesting is any electromagnetic carrier, which is radio, TV, telephone, power grids, you know, I mean, just think about all the different ways you can carry energy, and any of those carriers can be used for piggybacking another signal that will affect you physiologically or mentally if you know how to operate such systems and how to encode them. And this comes out in Russian research. It comes out in Chinese research that's been released by the Central Intelligence Agency to the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, stuff that has made it into the public record. All of these technologies are being talked about in the open literature and have been, but what hasn't happened is sort of the compilation of it all. Bring it all into one place where you say, okay, here's where the concept started, here's who developed them, here's where they're at, here's the patents that support these concepts and what these folks did with these patents. And that's essentially what we've done over the last 2 years, is amass that data in a way that is overwhelming. And it's, you know, it's all the leaders in the research field from the U.S., Europe, Canada, around the world.
You know, we all hear stories of people who have committed heinous crimes, and they say, you know, Satan whispered it in my ear. I heard voices.
Right.
You know, we get calls from people who say, help me, I hear voices. How do we know that, you know, they are not a little mentally challenged, or they are being bombarded by real voices?
Well, it could be. In fact, there's a guy, Woody Norris, who developed a...
Yes, I've talked to Woody.
Right, and he won the MIT Lemelson Prize for doing exactly that, by using two microwaves and heterodyning the signal, and you can hear the literal voice in the head. He also did one of the active denial systems for the military that shows up in the literature. But when you look at that technology, that's in the open literature, but this has been around. Voice in the head phenomena was first reported in the 60s by Alan Frey. And, you know, from the 1960s on, the experiments that took place in this area demonstrated the ability to transfer sound information, like what we're doing right now, talking directly into the brains of another person, so they perceive it as an auditory signal. What they used to call these, and still do, in some instances, they refer to some of these types of technology as infrasound devices.